Hey everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Inbound Unbound. I'm your host, Zach Weir, here at PED, and joining me today is my good friend, Chris Michelle. Chris, how are you today?
Good, real good.
Good. Chris, I've got a question for you. Are you really as raw as they say you are?
In a word, yes. No, that was just some obscure rap lyric that I heard in high school that I always really thought was funny. And my 20-year reunion's coming up, so that stuff, all those old memories are coming up lately. But yeah, I am as raw as they say I am.
Good. And how raw do they say that you are? If you had to rank your rawness on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being fresh cow, how raw? 1 is a well-done burger, by the way.
Like all things in life, on a scale of 1 to 10, I always hope for a 7.
Always hope for a 7. Okay, you know what? That's fair. I think I would put myself at like a 2. I don't think I'm very raw. Chris, we're here today to discuss content writing for Inbound. Overall, what we want to kind of hammer out today is how can you become a good writer when you're not a subject matter expert? So for anybody not quite familiar, PED writes a ton of stuff. We write everything from, oh my gosh, Chris, I'm not a writer. What do we write about?
Oh,
I'll put you on the spot.
I know. Well, in a general sense, we do everything from actual articles to landing page copy, to web page copy, to social posts and emails, or whatever any one of our clients ask us to on the fly there. So,
and what kind of industries are we covering with this kind of stuff?
Myself, and I had the cadence down for this a couple weeks ago when I was telling somebody the jumps that I make, but with the client load that I have, I go from custom hotel furniture to custom homes to advanced sensors to moisture meters to motion control technology and hinges to meat smokers and then to stuck rings. So it is a very, very wide variety. That's just for me. All of our coworkers here, we all have a pretty wide range of topics and a pretty big repertoire that we all have to be responsible for.
Yeah. So, and I think it's safe to say that you don't have like an engineering degree or a master's degree in each one of these topics, right?
No, not at all. So, I have 2 degrees in writing.
Yeah, let's actually circle back to that a little bit. Chris, tell the audience, tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. You know, who are you? What do you do here at PED? Let's start with that.
Okay. Well, so I'm Chris, which we established already.
Hi, Chris.
Howdy. I am a senior inbound marketing specialist here at PAD. I've been here since 2020. I started a few weeks before the pandemic hit. So my background, I'll try to give the shorter version of it, but professionally, I started off in journalism. I went to college for journalism. I started writing professionally, actually, when I was 15. The major Metro newspaper back home, they had a teen section. It was called Next, and I started writing for that. And I thought it was really cool. The first article I wrote, I got like $50 or something like that.
Nice.
And that was in like $2,002. So
it's like $1,000.
I know. So I thought that was really cool. So I just kind of stuck with that. Like I said, went to college for that specifically. At the time, I thought it was a good idea to go into print journalism. Times were different in the early 2000s. I did indeed end up going into reporting. I spent about 10 years as working at a newspaper. I was a reporter and then a reporter city editor. Couldn't give up reporting. I just loved doing that and writing.
Can you give us like a idea of what your favorite thing you ever reported on was? Tell you what, you can think about it. We can circle back to it.
No, I don't have a favorite particular article that I covered. Have a number of them. In a general sense, the ones that I liked that I wrote were ones that helped people. Or ones where I took a deep dive into the thing. I think my masterpiece article, there was a building in the community where I live that had been vacant. It was at the most prominent building in the community. It was at the main intersection, the busiest intersection in the county, and it had been empty and vacant and just unused for, 25 years, somewhere in that neighborhood. And there was all this, people were trying to reinvest in it, bring it back. It is now apartments and all of that. But I did this big story where I took just a deep dive into the history of all of that, attempts made to redevelop it, why everybody moved out in the first place, just the whole shot. So there was that one. I did a few on, I remember I did the Often Unseen, which was about rural homelessness.
Okay.
And that was really interesting. I did something about hunger and people on food stamps in the area and just the increase in that. So those were ones that really stand out to me. But I also just, even if I wrote the small piece on the upcoming benefit that was going to help out somebody who really needed it. You know, I like doing those type of pieces.
So. That's very cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, business writing was actually my forte.
Well, look where that got you.
I know, exactly. So, yeah, but speaking of which, after reporting in journalism, I stepped into economic development. I worked at a small economic development corporation for just under 5 years there. Did a lot of things, grant writing, helped redevelop some buildings. Not that I was actually doing it, but I was kind of doing the administrative paperwork and all that type of stuff. Helped launch.
Well, I think that's the important stuff anyway.
Right? Yeah.
Anybody can, like, you know, hit stuff with a hammer.
Yeah. I helped launch some small businesses, things like that. And then there was an opportunity here at P80, so came here.
Awesome.
Been here ever since.
And we're happy to have you.
Yes.
So. Cool. So, Chris, what does an average day look like for an inbound writer here at P80?
Well, an average day, I'll talk out of both sides of my mouth. It's different every day, but it's also the same. There are, as I found in this line of work, and just working at an agency life with a stable of clients that you have to go through, and manage. You are doing different things. You are writing about different things. You are handling different tasks, but the rhythm is there where you have to, you know, we are contracted out with a client to write, say, 4 blog articles a month for them, or handle a month's worth of social posts for them, or write that month's or that week's email for them. So the topics might all be different, but there's just that rhythm that, okay, no, you know, the first 2 days of my month, I try to tackle all the social posts, or I try to get the emails done, so those are all scheduled and that type of thing. Day by day, you know, for as much as I say it's the same, it is, you know, again, it is different. It's, you know, I would go crazy if there wasn't variety to it. You know,
thank goodness for moisture meters and for drum smokers.
Yes, yes, exactly. So much of it depends on where I'm at in the month. You know, there are weeks where, or, you know, there's usually week two, that's my bigger blog writing week and trying to get that stuff done, where week one might just be prep work, scut work kind of thing, like the social posts and just getting those kind of handled and that type of stuff, where week three might be maybe finishing up some blogs or starting to tackle some bigger project type things. A lot of it depends on, you know, what the client's expectations are, if there are any deadlines for anything like that. Within a day, I jump around between a lot of different things. I think that's just the way my brain works. I might start out by writing a blog and spend maybe an hour or two on that, but then I'll want to jump over to doing those social posts.
So you'll quit writing a blog in the middle of it?
You're, oh, yeah, 100%. I don't think I've ever written a blog from start to finish just in one shot.
Okay, that's cool. I didn't realize that. Is that something that you recommend, is always coming back with fresh eyes, pausing in the middle, or?
I think it depends on the person and attention spans. That's certainly...
If we're talking attention spans, I think I might have to write like a paragraph at a time. Yeah, right. Have a circle of them that I'm doing.
I mean, if you find it works for you, yeah, it's not something that I would say would recommend to someone who's just starting out, just because it's hard to get back on the saddle kind of thing when you step away at times. And I struggle with that. I don't know that that's the best way to handle all of that, but it does. I do know that it does help for me to where I'm into it, and then I maybe hit a wall, or I'm just kind of like, you know, I've spent 2 hours here. I'm just ready to just kind of focus my attention elsewhere just for a little bit, and maybe I'll come back to it that day. But, you know, I you know, almost every blog that I write is written within the same work day. It's just kind of, I just kind of jump around kind of thing. So
okay.
Do I recommend it? Yes and no, if you can handle it. You find out very quickly if you can't, so.
If you had to take a educated guess as to how long it would take you, just you, to write a blog post from start to finish, if you just sat down and tried to knock it out, on average, knowing that no two blog posts are the same.
Sure.
Including, like, your research and all that fun stuff.
Oh, okay. Well, what that would entail for me, and I'll just kind of go through my process here, is if I know, and we're walking into this, that I know the topic that I'm going to write about. That's been agreed upon, the clients approved it kind of thing, and we're ready to go. So... I would start by doing an outline. That takes anywhere from 30 to 45 minutes. That's just a lot of research. That's going on Google, searching the primary keywords, seeing what's out there, what other people are writing on it, reading those things a little bit, you know, skimming them just to get a sense of it, making sure that the primary keyword makes good sense, because there are times where it's like, oh, it's a really great keyword, but when you type in moisture meter, it's all big box retailer ads for actual products where better keyword for that purpose might be how to use a moisture meter, because that's what we're getting at. So just a lot of reading that type of stuff and coming up with that outline. I'll even leverage AI just a little bit because it can read the internet far faster than I ever could, and like all of the internet. So so a little bit of that.
We're going to touch more on AI and content just a little bit later.
Oh, there's no way we can't.
I know. It's too prevalent, though.
I know. That's about 30 to 45 minutes. Then I'll get together with the client and do usually I'll present the outline. That can take anywhere from 10 minutes to 30 minutes, just depending on how thorough my outline is, if I've missed anything or I need to take anything out, or if I've just hit it on the mark, you know, nail on the head kind of thing. And a lot of time I'm able to do that just because I've worked with my clients for so long and just the familiarity that I've developed over. And we are, I want to be very clear, we're talking over the course of 3 or 4 years here. It's not just like I got to know them 3 months ago kind of thing.
You didn't jump in, read their website, and then, you know, assume you know enough. Gotcha.
So once I get all of that, then it's time to sit down to write. The writing process, I would say, if I'm feeling comfortable enough with it, so like I am truly going middle of the road, average blog kind of thing, where I don't know everything, but I've got a really good foundation to work with and all of that, I would say it would take me anywhere from 4.5 to 5.5 hours. After that, once that's all written, that goes into an internal review here. Depends on who's looking at it. That that usually, though, does take, you know, about at least 30 minutes. Somebody just...
Chris, you can name drop. Who reviews your stuff? I mean, you're who I would go to review anything that I write.
Usually I keep it within my pod here. Brian Lothridge, one of our coworkers here, he'll look at my stuff. Adam and Bossler, I guess I should say their last names if I'm going full bore here. they'll look at stuff for... I've had past pod members here that we try to do peer editing internally within the pods much as possible. So,
and we haven't really discussed our pod structure or anything on this show yet. Okay. But we'll talk about that in a future episode too. And talk about just agency life in general.
Sure. So they'll look it over. Usually it's maybe about 10 minutes of edits because, as I found and as anybody should find, you cannot be your own editor. It is absolutely, positively impossible to edit your work with 100% accuracy and thorough. You can't do it. You have a blind spot to it no matter what. And you can step away from a piece for 3 years and come back to it. And I've done this where it was a piece I wrote 3 years ago and I see that thing, you know, that I missed 3 years earlier, or it's like, you know, I want to tweak that kind of thing. So there's that. Then once I go through that, client reviews it, their edits usually, take a little less time than that, and then publishing it out, that's usually on average about 20 to 25 minute thing. So that's publishing it, formatting it in the platform that we use, putting all the, I call it the settings level stuff, so things like a page title or a meta description, the tags in it, that type of stuff, and then doing the social posting and scheduling that out. So if I had everything lined up and everybody was ready to do their part exactly when was needed, I would say to create a blog from start to finish would be an entire workday, so 8 hours thereabouts.
That seems completely fair. Very interesting. I like hearing other people's strategies. I myself am not a writer, never have been. Hopefully, I never will be. I have no business writing blogs that anybody's going to read. It's interesting to know what, you know, somebody like you, one of our senior writers, does on a daily basis for that and your specific approach. Tell me, you mentioned reading some content that you've written years previous. Have you ever come across a piece that you wrote maybe back in 2021 or early on in your career here in 2020, and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that I published this. This is absolutely humiliating. People read this?
Yeah, absolutely.
What did you do when you found those? Just hit unpublish frantically and just hopefully nobody ever sees it again?
Yeah, right. I mean, this has happened all through my professional writing life where if I go back to the first article that I ever wrote, back when I was writing for that teen section for the newspaper, it was about going to Star Wars Celebration 2 in Indianapolis. And my brother and I wrote this, you know, wrote the article just about the experience and all of that. And I have it somewhere, and it's like, you know, good Lord, 15-year-old Chris didn't know what he was doing. And I mean, that was very true. That was, you know, no shame in that. You know, I look at that, and it's like, here's what I would do differently. Or I go back to the stuff that I wrote in college, the college newspaper, and it's like, you know, it was good. It was, you know, people thought it was good and all of that. But I look at it and it's like, good Lord, what was, you know, College Chris doing there? And I'll look back at stuff I've written, you know, when I was a newspaper reporter, and same deal. When I come across stuff that I've written here for clients that's 3-4 years old, or maybe even a little younger, when I'm looking at that stuff, I'm usually doing that because we're going back to reoptimize it and just freshen it up a little bit. So it's not necessarily like I'm just going through my clients' websites and, you know, just kind of reading my greatest hits or something like that. So there's usually that intention.
You definitely could, though. There's some pretty good ones out there.
Yeah. So I'm going into, you know, reading my old pieces with the intention of freshening it up. So when I see those things where it's like, good Lord, what was 2021 Chris thinking there? It's a, well, I'm here to fix anything and do some other things anyway. So what do? I rework it. I use, you know, I'm someone who's always going to be learning, as we all are. And, you know, what worked in 2021, even if I was following best practices to the T and wrote a piece that was being held up as an example, things change. And in this industry and online, things change drastically. I mean, that piece from 2021 that we're talking about, that's ancient. I mean, that's like Dead Sea Scroll level ancient by internet standards. And what worked back then and what was considered best practice, it just simply might not be anymore. So it is just that matter of going in and being like, okay, what do I know now? How do I improve this? What do I want to change about this? And I'm going to make those changes. So,
okay.
And yeah, secretly I have encountered a few of those pieces where it's like, I'm not there to fix it. I just kind of come across them and it's like, oh God, Chris, what did you do? And
oh no.
I just go in and fix it quick. It's not a major change of substance kind of thing, but it's just that, all right, we're just going to tweak this one just a tad.
So do you ever worry that in like 2027 or 2028, you're going to be looking back at the blogs that you wrote in 2024, now that you're writing like a higher velocity of them and that you're editing other people's and your voice is getting put into those and you're just going to freak out and think, oh my God, what was 2024 Chris doing?
Oh yeah, I'm sure I'll be horrified.
Again, another reason that I'm very happy I'm not a writer. So Chris, when we're talking about writing like this, what makes somebody a good writer, especially for inbound? And then what the hell do you do if you're not an industry expert, but you still want to write well for something like this in this capacity?
So what makes someone a good writer? I was trying to think about this a little bit.
I feel like that's the million-dollar question.
I know. I think some of it has to do with recognizing that we're not all great writers, and that even there are times where we're just not good writers, and recognizing a skill set. I know that sounds confusing here, and I'm sure once I get into it. I think one of the big problems that I see out there is that there are people who, with the best of intentions, and I'm not getting down on anybody, but it's like, well, I can put together a sentence. I'm a good writer. It's kind of like, to a degree, it's like when you see someone drops the $1,000 on that brand new Canon brand camera, and it's like, oh, okay, so I'm a photographer now. Because I have, you know, I have that. And I see it where it's like, well, I have, you know, we all have access to the Google Suite or Microsoft Word, or, you know, Google Docs, you know, what have you. Some type of word processor. We now pretty much all have access to AI that can help finesse things. There's plenty of other free tools out there that can help you improve your writing. But where it is just this, I have the tools here, so I'm a writer. And I think there's got to be a little bit of recognition that no, not necessarily. What's a good writer? To be a good writer, there's an acumen to it, and an acumen can't be taught. It's, you say, thank God you're not a writer. I say, thank God that I'm not a graphic designer.
Oh my God, right? Mad respect for graphic designers. Yes.
You know, back in my newspaper days, could I lay a page? Yeah, absolutely. In a pinch, I could do it. But that was working in a giant rectangle and putting in squares and rectangles and making it kind of look symmetrical. I can do that just fine, but like, I wouldn't even know where to start to create something like a logo and, you know, to do that from scratch. What our graphic designer here does, like, kind of maybe I could do that a little bit, but that artistic eye and that artistic ability that person has, that is an acumen. And I don't believe that I could go to graphic design or art school and walk out of there and be at the same level as a graphic designer, right. Someone with that acumen. So
you might learn the skill set, but it's still that innate understanding of what goes on. Yeah.
So there's that with the acumen. I think one of the big things
that helps out with being a good writer and a serviceable writer is being able to take information, whether that's you've researched something and you're trying to present it to other people, or you're just freestyling it and you're writing just your thoughts down about something and writing it, distilling it down into something that is clear and coherent and concise. Run-on sentences, which I'm sure I'm guilty of verbally doing right now. I mean, that's something I see a lot. Can you start saying
period, please?
Yeah. I see that type of thing a lot. Run-on sentences are just where these abrupt jumps from thought to thought. Pieces that are a lot longer than they should be, where it's not me, you know, as an editor just saying, let's hack this down for the sake of it. It's like, well, no, you actually are kind of Frankensteining, you know, three or four different pieces here together, three or four different thoughts here, and it's choppy. It's not making for a good read here. Maybe it's best that we cut it here, and you actually have three or four different pieces entirely here. So there's that. I feel like I'm giving a lot of different answers to this question. It's so hard to nail down what makes a good writer.
Right.
And just because there's so much to it. And it's years of experience too.
Yeah. When I think about like what makes a good writer, I almost think of it like a chef, right? You said that there's that like internal thing that some people just have. Chefs maybe have something akin to like a perfect palate where they can identify these unique flavors that work super well together, and they just have this internal clock that tells them exactly when things need to go in the pot, things need to go in the oven, when it needs to come out, all that fun stuff. And to me, that's like what the writers here are doing, is they're taking the research, they're taking all these ingredients, they're taking information from our contacts at each one of these companies, and they're simmering everything together and making this amazing soup of a blog. Yeah, that's what I'm gonna go with. That's why I'm not a writer exactly. They're making this amazing soup of a blog that is just immaculate and that, you know, people want to consume. Whereas, you know, if somebody like me were to sit down and try to become a writer, yes, I have the tools. I've got AI to help me out with some research. I can take to Google. I understand the, you know, best practices for writing an inbound blog, but god damn, am I just not a good writer. It's just I don't have that perfect palette for it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess that harkens back to what we were just talking about a little bit, where it's like looking back and it's like, yeah, I mean, like, was I at the time, you know, as a high schooler, a good writer in high school? Yeah, sure. Absolutely. I was, but that doesn't mean much in the real world, you know, 20 years later kind of thing. and it shouldn't, but even, you know, even working here, I mean, looking a year ago, there's a difference there, because always growing, always learning, just more experience and just doing it regularly.
Yeah, it's Kaizen. That's why we practice that.
Yeah, exactly. So, so that's a huge thing, I think, is just the experience is such a factor here. Experience and acumen.
What about if you're not an industry expert? Like, how do you go and you write about all these complex things if, you know, your degree is in writing?
Well, it's a lot of the it's been very, very, very helpful to come from a journalism background. There, I went to journalism school to learn how to write articles and to learn how to interview people and to learn how to essentially learn about topics. One of the best pieces of advice that I got, it was when the orientation, and I don't know why I keep talking about the teen section that I wrote for here, but the orientation there, they had one of the more seasoned reporters come down just to address the youths that day, the high schoolers. You know, inspire us a little bit. And one of the things he said was doing the 5 minutes of homework before he made a call to anybody. Just doing that made a huge difference, and that always stuck with me. I found myself as a reporter stepping into articles and, you know, some complex stuff that I didn't know. The community where I was a reporter in the city where I live, they were going to redo their wastewater treatment plant, $19.2 million upgrade, and there were some pretty big issues with that plant that persist today, where just in times of flooding.
It's not what you want to hear about a water treatment plant.
Well, it's times of flooding, it would, you know, overflow into area river kind of thing. Just a whole mess. So they were investing all this money to finally fix all of that. And I had no idea about how, I mean, I understood the theory
of what a wastewater treatment plant does, and that it treats wastewater and makes dirty water clean again and enters the system, and that's that. But having to speak to the public works director and get the story, I mean, I had to do that couple minutes of homework and then be able just to talk to him. And I know all about a couple of these different methods. I think it was the MVBR method.
You can do whatever letters out there, and I'm going to believe it.
Exactly. And I know those are wrong. I think it's pretty close. But, I walked out of that article and, after that interview, rather, 15 minutes of it, kind of an expert on municipal wastewater treatment systems, because I had done my homework ahead of time and that I'd talked to someone who knew about it. And that was another early journalism lesson that I got in college, was how do we learn about things? How do we learn about, it was more, how do we learn about people? So you're doing that profile on, Zach, I'm going to write a profile about you for the paper. So how do I learn about you? Well, I talk to you, and it's, I talk to you to get a sense, like one-on-one, and size you up a little bit, but then it's about what you do, what you say, and what other people say about you. And I can apply that to what I do now. So, yeah, I don't know anything about, I didn't walk into our moisture meter client knowing about flood damage restoration and the role of that hygrometers might play in all of that. My client was an expert in that, and I knew what level of ignorance that I had. I knew the right people to talk to, which was the client. I knew to do 5-10 minutes of homework, just to do a Google search at least, to try to get some grasp of it. If I had AI at the time, I would have probably been consulting that and, explain to me what this thing is, and being able to, tap the resources that I had. I'm a really big believer in, I'm trying to remember the exact, it's making use of what you have, but it's what like Luke Skywalker said to Rey, and it's like, you already have everything you need. There's been a number of colleagues here that when they were brand new and I was training them, and it's, Chris, I don't know how I'm going to write about this topic. I don't know anything about this. And it's like, yes, you do. You don't need to, but you have everything you need here. You have some of the greatest inventions and knowledge banks in human history, quite literally at your fingertips, immediately accessible. You have the entire internet. You have AI now. You have both of those on your phone. So...
wise words from a wise Jedi.
So it's about knowing where to turn, making use of what you have, not being afraid to say that, this might be a dumb question to you, but it's a pretty important one to me, because I don't know about this. Tell me about moisture meters and tell me about hygrometers and their role in flood damage restoration. There was no way that I was walking into... into that relationship and into, with that client, knowing anything. The chances were minuscule that I would. The meat smoker people that I work with, well, yeah, I love barbecue. They have a pizza oven attached. Pizza making's my hobby. Like, my wife says that half the reason she married me was because of the pizzas I make. So, like, I can talk the talk with them a little bit. You have those, or, the custom home client I have. Well, I live in a house, so there's that, but... I don't know everything about what they do, but I know to ask them, and I know to research it ahead of time a little bit, at least the topic, and gain that familiarity. And I'm at a point now where, because I've been working with these people so long, I have that level of familiarity that I'm kind of an expert on, in a certain respect, I'm kind of an expert on moisture meters to a degree, or, on custom home building with the panelized construction method. I know enough about it to be dangerous, kind of thing. So,
yeah. And I think that's true for a lot of the folks here too, is we spend so many months, so many years working with these clients, learning about their businesses, that to a certain extent, we do become subject matter experts, at least insofar as the content that we produce. I'm thinking about some of ours, and like the metal additive manufacturing or the metal injection molding side of things. Like, we've got a writer here, Chrissy, who's going to be on a future show as well, and she's written about those ad nauseum at that point, and she can spot off like any little factoid about them. But I know she can't step into a additive manufacturing facility and just go to work. But yeah, she's become an expert to a certain degree. So Chris, you've done your homework, you've learned about the topic a little bit, you've met with the client, you've got some notes, you've got your outline in place, you're ready to sit down and start writing, but the dreaded writer's block hits and the words just don't flow. What do you do?
Well,
Yeah, writer's block. That is...
It's been, a bitch and a half to get through.
Yeah, I've been wrestling with that one for years. to me, writing is a feeling. And if I'm just not feeling it, then I'm going to have, to the outsider, it might look like writer's block. To me, it's just me procrastinating. It's just me trying to avoid the task. It's certainly me saying, there. Well, yeah. I don't want to write about this thing. Oh, look, I need to do social posts. I can do that. That's a quick winner. You know, oh, wait, they need an email. I'm all over that.
You know, kind of thing.
So much of it is just about, yeah, writing is a feeling to me more than anything. And when I wish I could tell you what that feeling was, but when I'm feeling it, like, I'm good to go and I'm ready to get moving. When it stops becoming a feeling, what I try to do after I've, you know, done 50 other tasks and everything, I try to identify where this is coming from. Is this just because, well, I can write a fun lead or introduction to the article? I still speak about the blog articles that I write here in newspaper terms here. So is it because I was able to write a fun lead or introduction and now we're getting into a topic that is very foreign to me and it's just ignorance and I'm just ignorance to the topic? And even though I have these really good notes, though, it's not making, you know, it's still science or engineering, a high level of engineering. So is this just a matter of I need to talk to the client a little bit more? Do I need to do more homework? Do I need to just make the attempt at writing something and be comfortable to and confident enough to put just a comment on that Google Doc that says, hey, wasn't too sure about this. Here's what I think. Here's what I've whipped up. What do you guys think? Did I hit, you know, what am I missing here? And just trying to write through it. So, you know, yeah, identifying the cause, that's a huge part of it for me. If it's just I'm not feeling it kind of thing. This isn't about ignorance. This isn't about not doing the homework. This is one that I would tell anybody listening, like, you've got to be an experienced professional here to even attempt this one, because it can almost certainly spell disaster. And it's something that I don't do that often. I thrive under pressure. That's what I liked about newspaper writing.
I think I see where this is going.
When it came up, I mean, breaking news, oh, I loved it. I loved it. I loved going out to the scene or whatever it was, or typing up the, you know, this just in level piece and posting it, and then having to work quickly. And, you know, blowing up phone lines, writing as fast as I could. I loved it. And to do that here, I mean, it's not, we don't have that here, which is nice, but it's like when I put deadlines on myself to have the pressure of the deadline. That can be a huge motivator. Again, if you're not experienced with that, like, you can really screw yourself over that way, where you just miss the deadline. So I'll do that sometimes sparingly. Music, that's another big one that I turn to a lot, and it's really weird. And I've told
you
that
share
I'm
share some like epic music on LinkedIn. Don't
yeah,
you?
I do. I've been trying to. epic work requires epic music.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah, so I've been told that I'm not the only person who does, so I know at least one other person who does this, but I have, there are times where I will just put on a song and then just put it on repeat, and it will be 2 hours later, where it's not that I'm actively listening to the song, it becomes just ambient background noise that kind of quiets everything else.
Sure.
So that helps quite a bit. Stepping away, as I mentioned, you know, I don't think I've ever written a blog in a straight shot, even when I am feeling it. When I work from home, I'm just thinking this time of year, my vegetable garden is in. I'll go outside sometimes, you know, when I'm not feeling it, and I'll just go...
Oh, I'm telling.
Check out my garden. I don't care. I'll tell anybody.
Like, Donnie, you don't understand the tomatoes that needed me.
Yeah. I'll just go there and just look at my garden, just kind of hang there for 5-10 minutes, see how everybody's doing.
Get some sun, you know,
yeah, maybe
hang out with the potatoes.
Douse the cucumbers if they need it a little bit, or,
yeah.
You know, today's going to be 94, and it's like, yeah, I might want to give them a little water, just see how it's going out there. It's nice and quiet, and seeing the quite literal fruits of my labor there, so
that
helps.
For anybody that doesn't know, Chris is an avid gardener.
Yes. Yes.
His garden is part of his family, as I've come to learn.
Yes.
You know, I think I've got some similar notions on it. I don't write anywhere to the degree that you do. I think we've established that thoroughly at this point. But I do a lot of, like, technical HubSpot implementation and coaching and whatnot. And there's times where I'm just sitting there for hours working on a workflow or working on data migration. And it's just like your eyes just go cross. And like you said, you just get to the point where you're not feeling it. I found like one of three things will work for me. Either just getting on that super tight deadline and like, oh no, I have to meet with them later this afternoon. I only have 2 hours to get this done. It has to get done, and it gets done somehow magically. Getting up and just walking away for a little bit / working on something else just to get the momentum going again, or just to give yourself a quick mental break.
Yeah.
And then coming back with a fresh set of eyes. Like when I work from home, I'll go do a load of laundry, and especially this time of year, like I like putting it out in the line to dry. It smells fantastic afterwards, better than my dryer. So, you know, that gets me away for 5 or 10 minutes, and it's great. Quick mental break there. Or I do this a lot here. If you're ever walking by my office door and my door's closed, but you don't hear me on a call or anything, chances are it's because I got stuck in a task and I didn't know what to do. One, I don't want people to see me because that's super embarrassing, just staring at my screen, not doing anything. But I also will put on like rap rock music. A lot of people don't know that I love it. Like there's this artist I've been following, Nefex, for quite a while. not for everybody, I know that, but... he's got like this epic music that just gets me in the zone. It's like my pre-workout music too.
Sure.
So I'll put my AirPods in my office. I'll get up and like bounce around a little bit. I'll start stretching. I'll get the blood flowing that way if I can't go for a walk or something. So yeah, there's a good chance if you ever see my door closed and I'm not in the call and then they're hyping myself up to get something done.
Like I will keep that in mind. Yeah. I guess. I'm just kind of scribbling down notes here just more that we're talking here because we can riff. Few other things that I've found help me it's so much of it is when I get writer's block, it's not about necessarily overcoming it, but preventing it to begin with. So like the homework element here, the, you know, asking the questions kind of thing, doing the outline, walking in knowing with, you know, a loose, like essentially roadmap of what I'm going to do. That makes a huge difference.
Do you outline in docs or do you outline in your pad there? I see you got pen and paper. I'm a huge advocate of pen and paper, even though we're a digital marketing agency.
I do it in docs. Okay. I mean, there have been times where I'm scribble it down, but if I'm not, my writing is horrible. My handwriting is horrible.
Yeah, I can see
so,
that from here.
It makes sense to me for like those 10 minutes, but like an hour later, I can't tell. One of the things that I try to do for intervention is against writer's block is to... The simple fact of the matter is that not every topic that we write about is the most exciting.
True.
Wood moisture equivalencies. It's a scientific thing for moisture meters. I've come to find it very interesting, but it's more of an academic thing, and it's not... If there are some days where I feel like I could be writing stereo instructions. So what do? I try to make it interesting to myself. I try to have some fun with it, whether that's writing a really, really fun lead and stepping into it. So, I mean, there was a while where I would pick something very opposite about what the topic was. So I remember the one blog I did for the moisture meter company started out, the topic was about using a moisture meter and understanding how to use it, a training element to it. And it's like, I started out writing about going to the dentist and how confident would you feel if, you know, the dentist is, you know, asking the hygienist what that tray of tools are, they're holding up your x-ray upside down. How confident would you feel?
I think I've been to this dentist.
Where I'm just kind of having fun with her. I think I wrote about another time, like finding King Tut's tomb or a NASCAR race, I think, or a football, your favorite NFL team and watching them play, where it was just so like, what the heck does this have to do with moisture meters here? And, you know, being able to tie that, you know, I mean, there was a point to it kind of thing.
Right.
But to have fun, to just have some fun and make it interesting, because I guess I look at it very simplistically that if I'm not finding it interesting, by no means am I saying that I'm the barometer here necessarily, but if the writer isn't finding this interesting and having some fun with it, or at least making it a little compelling and feeling compelled by it, how in hell's name would a reader feel that? Like, even if it is that...
You know, I think you are the barometer for your own content.
Even if it is that highly technical thing that the engineer really wants to read about, if they're going to get bored and they're not going to like it, they're going to go away. They're going to turn somewhere else pretty quickly. So
you got to maintain that human aspect, right? There's the whole UX side of it, not just how it's laid out, but the digestion part of it.
Just the two other things here to end this. One thing, you know, when I have writer's block and I'm trying to deal with it is I'll take a quick sonic break, and I have my at my office, my home office, I have a TV there, and my Sega Genesis is hooked up, and I will play maybe 10 minutes of Sonic, because it is not writing. It is not anything work-related. So just to have that mental break of something that was fun. And, nice. It, you know, it's really hard to get to play. Okay, it's not really hard to. It's really easy to play Sonic for a long time. But you got to be very cognizant. But Sonic, I mean, it's an older video game. They're not like these, like,
MMORPGs.
MMORPGs. It's not like that, where these are like 40 and 50 hour game, and it's not like, you know, Legend of Zelda here, where you can get lost. Like, it's just doing a quick map and like, okay, we defeated Robotnik, we're good. We can continue on.
The world is safe for another 10 minutes.
So I'll do that. I've also noticed, just with myself, inspiration can strike at any moment. My phone here, the notebook on there, it's probably hundreds of pages long of grocery lists and such, but in between those there are times where it's like I'll be at my daughter's soccer game or her karate match, and that thing just hits about that, you know, that moisture meter article that I'm writing, and it's like, you know, there it is, Chris, and I'm just gonna write it down here real quick, and I'll come back to it, but I want to capture this thought here, and there it is, and then everything flows.
It's amazing how you like always carry that kind of stuff with you that you're working on. It's just kind of ticking away in the back of your brain, right. And then all of a sudden it just clicks and you've got it out of nowhere.
Yeah,
I love when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, it. There have been times where it's like it's midnight and I'm getting ready for bed, and it's like, that's what I wanted to say. That's the hook. That's the thing. That there it is. Hand. I got it.
Next time that happens, I want you to jump out of bed and yell "Eureka!" and sprint out of the room to your computer.
Right. So, yeah.
All right. So, Chris, we've talked about, you know, let's say hypothetically you've done your research, you've got your outline, you've written your blog, you've had those eureka moments where you've gone through and maybe switched up the verbiage a couple times, and you're ready, you give it to the client, and you just can't wait to hand over the shining masterpiece of a piece of content, and they read it and say, what the hell is this? This sucks. How do you move on from feedback like that? Well, or how do you just move on from negative feedback, period, when you think you've done a great job writing something?
One that's never happened to me.
Well,
no, good it has. For you. It's happened enough times. Certainly there's the disappointment. You know, because you just outlined what I went through and just how proud I am, and it's shiny and new, and like, man, this piece is ready to go. We're gonna, it's gonna
spend
do
an
its
entire day plus working on it.
You know, it's gonna be a great piece here, and then to just have somebody be like, eh. No. So what do you know, certainly live with the disappointment. You can't just ignore that. It's very, you know, writers need to have thick skins to begin with. And again, thank God for my years in journalism. I can't tell you the number of articles that I wrote where factually and like everything about them was correct. There was nothing wrong. I did not say anything wrong, but someone just didn't like the piece because they didn't like the piece. And there was a contingent of people out there who had no bones about calling the community newspaper up, you know, at 10:30 in the morning to tell them just how much they didn't like that article.
Oh my gosh, that really happened.
Wow. Oh yes. Some of it would just be, I mean, some of it was more serious stuff, like police reports. People don't like seeing their names in police reports.
Well, maybe they shouldn't do stuff to get in the police reports.
There's that. That's the number one piece of advice I could give anybody. If you don't want to get arrested for breaking the law, when you've broken the law, just don't break the law. You'll be fine.
Or, you know, if you're going to break the law, just don't get caught. I
mean, yeah.
There's two sides to this.
If you don't want to get a speeding ticket, don't speed. It's just that
simple.
Don't
speed in front of a cop.
Yes.
I mean, let's add that. Oh. Okay, let's move on from this.
but there's that thick skin that we're supposed to have, but while we have it, we also don't. I mean, it's even on articles that, or blog articles that I'm not the most engaged I've ever been, I still take pride in my work. I still want somebody to like it.
Sure.
I still want it to do its thing and all of that. So certainly just living with the disappointment. But it kind of comes, it goes back to me, the same thing with writer's block, the root cause here. Okay, client, you're not happy with this piece. Why not? Is this about tone? Is this about the information presented in it? Is something missing? Is there something there that shouldn't be? Where was this mess? And, you know, let's just get beyond the, well, I don't like it. We got to get a little bit more specific. And certainly it can be tone, because every client is different and every client wants their own voice. And, you know, did I just not write it in the way that, you know, I'm talking about?
What about like a personal voice for that client reviewing it versus writing for the voice of the company and like a potential disconnect there? Is that anything that you've ever encountered where somebody says, no, this blog isn't right, you missed the tone, even though you know that you've captured the tone of the company?
Yeah, I encountered that with a client. I remember, yeah.
And how quickly did you tell them just to go pound sand?
It was getting close. they were, you know, we were at a point in the relationship. They were newer, and then they had new people come in, and I do think that it was a matter.
Tricky to navigate.
And they were like fresh out of college people, and I'm not getting down on anybody for anything here. I'm not.
But know your place, and yeah.
But when you, it was the element there. I think of, well, I'm new with the job. This is my first real job. Like, I'm here to make an impression, boss, you know, kind of thing. So it was kind of letting that play out a little bit. As far as that debate between personal voice, I mean, there's always a middle ground. There's always a way to find that middle ground, I guess. You know, where it was like with that client, I mean, it was like I was using phrases and things that I've used for plenty of other people, plenty of other times, like, doing this thing should just be a no-brainer. It should be effortless. And it's like, well, this is negative language. And it's like, well, I mean,
yes, but no.
I guess, but no. Or I remember them too. I did this lead. I was comparing. I was famous pairings in it. So Batman and Robin, Thelma and Louise, and Jordan and Pippin. And these young folks had no idea who Jordan and Pippin was. And it's like,
for any young folks listening, can you tell us who Jordan and Pippen are?
Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen of the Chicago Bulls during their championship runs. Just
there you have it, young
duo,
folks.
Famous duo. But it was like, okay, I'm sorry. Like, and because I was 22 at one point in my life, I promise. But it's like, I know that you guys don't know, like, this might not be resonating with you. You might not know who Jordan and Pippen are when I say if I said Michael Jordan, yeah, of course they're going to know. Maybe Scottie Pippen, I don't know so much. But, you know, Thelma and Louise, I think that's, like, pretty universal. And Batman and Robin, like, if you don't recognize that, we got some bigger problems here in life. But it was just a matter of, you know, you might not know, but the intended audience is going to know. And the intended audience at that point in time was people who were over 40. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, of course they're going to know. They're going to remember the three-peats. So I know that I got off track there. So what do I do with that? It is kind of a matter, like, between, there's always the middle ground. And it's the, okay, why do you feel so compelled? It's the root cause. Why do you feel so compelled? You don't like, you want me to say automobile. I want to say car. Why? What's the, is this you, or is this industry phrasing? Is this what your intended customer is? This they always talk about an automobile kind of thing. They never talk about cars. I also have to remember too, within reason, because I've never had anybody be unreasonable. Even in the, well, Chris, that's negative language. I mean, there was just that little back and forth. I have to remember that as the writer, it's also not my piece. It is, but it isn't. I'm ghostwriting.
Right.
And if the client doesn't like sentences started with coordinating conjunctions, or they just are, they, you say automobile, we don't care that car saves ink, so to speak. You know, this is the way we do it. This is the way I say it. And I have the final say here, you know, just being willing to accept that. And, right. And that's absolutely okay. But, you know, again, a lot of just kind of the root cause, where are you coming from? Why is this so important? You help me understand where you're coming from. Okay. And most of the time, like 99.999 repeating percent of the time, we get there real easy and it's not a big deal.
So it sounds like outwardly we've got this kind of down pat, right? We, you know, try to come to an agreement with a client, whoever it is that we're writing for, saying, okay, we understand that there's a disconnect here. Let's explain our reasoning. You explain yours. Yeah. Let's meet in the middle and figure out what we can do to get this piece where it needs to be without having to trash it and start over.
Yeah.
But, you know, as a human, that's something that you worked 8+ hours on, and that's still got a sting to an extent. So how do you, I guess, consolidate or, you know, address those internal feelings? I mean, let's get really into this.
Sure.
Chris, have a seat on this couch. This is a safe space.
Well, having the years of experience certainly helps. That, you know, it's and this type of thing usually happens when it's a newer client, where it's that those first few, quick, probably 6 months of feeling each other out, getting that sense of, you know, what is your brand voice, or what do you like, what don't you like, how do you want to present things, or more importantly, how don't you want them presented, and going back and forth you know, that way. It's just making peace with that, that, you know, like I said, it's ultimately not my piece. You know, I am not, I'm not taking that moisture beater blog home to mom and put, you know, and, you know, kind of thing. It's not, it's going on their website. We are the hired help. And I don't like bringing it down to that, but it is just keeping that in mind. Also, as I keep coming back to the prep work, getting that rapport with the client and working towards that. So yeah, it might be your first three blogs or your first three blog articles. Just for listeners out there, this is something that I you keep hearing me correct myself on. I write articles and we refer to them colloquially as blogs, but the blog is the collection of articles. So
I'm glad somebody finally said it.
Yes, yes. You know, it's, you know, yeah, those first few articles that I write, there's gonna be some back and forth on that, and I expect that. I don't expect to stick the landing the very first piece that I write and we're good to go the rest of the time. But as long as I continue to work at it, that I continue to ask those questions, that I continue to listen to how they talk, kind of just get a better working relationship with the client, that usually puts an end to that type of thing relatively quickly. So okay, we can move on and have that productive relationship where it's just not a, well, I'm all upset here because they are really insistent that I say automobile and that was my baby and they're murdering my darlings here kind of thing. So,
okay, Chris, we are coming up on time pretty quickly here. So I'm going to jump ahead just a smidge.
Okay.
All right, so we've talked a little bit about this already. We've mentioned AI a couple times, and I'm sure that that's going to be part of your answer to this question. But when we think about how content writing or writing for inbound has evolved over the past 15 years, like I look at some of the blogs that PAD put out in the past on our own website and client websites, and it used to be like a 300-word paragraph that was just word salad. Mm-hmm. It was nonsensical, but it had a couple keywords in there and it could rank somehow. We've obviously come a long way.
Yeah.
So where do you see the world of inbound writing evolving in the coming years?
That's something that I think about a lot. Because I go back to, as you point out, like we look at what we used to do. I go back to when I first started here and I was like reviewing our content or being assigned to freshen up that piece that at the time was written 5 years ago, which right now would be 10 years old. And there were days where it was like, how did this make it to print? And obviously standards had changed. And, you know, at that point in time, what was being done made complete sense. I mean, we talked a while ago about how with keyword selection and how it used to be that if your primary word was, if your primary keyword was moisture meter, you had to have that in that piece. But you also, if you also wanted to get traffic for moisture meters, the plural, you also had to have that in your piece. Google wasn't smart enough to recognize plural.
Thank God that's not the case.
Yeah, I know. So obviously things change and they change so quickly. They are changing in a way that I haven't seen things change this fast before. And, you know, I've only been at this and I say only, but like 5 years now, where I see things going is I think that things are going to get a lot shorter. What I find writing for inbound confounding because Google, and I'll just say it here. Google sets the rules. You know, yeah, it's not the only search engine game in town, but it's the big one here.
Sure.
And I'm just speaking in facts here. It just, Google essentially sets the rules and that's what we write to. And the standards that we write to. Google will sit there and say to everybody, we love long form content. And nobody has ever been able to give a solid number as a good blog article should be X number of words. But Google will say, we love long form content. So figure about 2,000, at least 2,000, probably 2,500 at least words.
Sure.
But then in the next breath, Google will be like, yeah, but here's a great study about how humans' attention span now is 7 seconds. And that's less than a goldfish's, which is 8. Right. So it's like, okay, then Google will say later, well, we want you to write to humans. And it's like, okay, can do.
But then
it's like, well, it's more question-based. And it's like, okay, well, I'll do that too. So where's this middle ground here? And then they're like, oh, but by the way, here's this new feature that we have where whatever search query they're putting in, or a user is putting in, whatever article they click on, we're going to automatically take them.
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned
that. To that text and highlight it.
So they don't have to read anything else.
So they don't have. So me as the writer, it's like, but you told me 2,500 words minimum, and you take them to 10, and then they leave. So it's like, and their attention spans, but do this and that. And it's like, what are you looking for here? I think that things are going to become a lot shorter, particularly with AI. I think that people are, it's going to be all question based, or not all question based, a lot more question based. We're already seeing that. And what I'm seeing in the evolution of content is that it's no longer a one piece that's 10,000 words. It's not producing that one web page that has a pillar page that is, which is something I'd love to talk about another time here, but
yeah, we can never end again.
It's not creating a pillar page that's 10,000 words. It's shifting towards creating 10,000 word pieces, breaking that into kind of quarters, so to speak. So I would write three or four pieces around. So you've got your big idea, which is the pillar, but then what are the three or four supporting ideas with that? And to those supporting ideas, you're writing three or four articles to that, and then creating a little mini pillar page that's maybe 2,000 words. And everything's linked, and you're creating these clusters of knowledge.
Have we created an outline for this yet?
Yes.
Do we have an infographic that we can share? If not, hey, Rachel, as you're editing this, we need an infographic.
I have one. It's really bad. What I told people was, it's like the way that I see where it's shifting towards is it's like creating a March Madness bracket that a spider has put a web through in a bunch of different strategic places. So I just took a March Madness bracket and then that. But what that's doing, and you know, to the listeners out there, I just want you to pay attention to your conversations in the next week. When you're talking with, when someone's trying to tell you about something they've learned about or something they explored, I guarantee you 9 times out of 10, they're going to say, yeah, last night I was reading about this thing and I went down a rabbit hole. And that is kind of what I'm getting at here, is that it's creating these clusters of interconnected knowledge on a subject.
So we want to make the rabbit holes.
That are the rabbit holes that people can get. They're heavily linked and connected, and you can kind of keep people within that cluster of knowledge. So they, you know, yeah, they're not spending an hour reading one 10,000 word piece, but they are spending an hour reading 10 1,000 word pieces and kind of skipping around and getting lost and going down those rabbit holes and through that network. So that's where I see it going. I also just see, I'm really, really curious to see how search engines are going to respond to AI and where that's at, because
ooh, I have a prediction on this.
People are asking more questions of the AI as opposed to going to Google, yep, or going to, you know, Alta Vista or LexisNexis kind of thing, or web crawler. So what I'm seeing is that search engines are trying to get out in front of it. Well, here's ours, where we've partnered with this AI and it's there. I mean, last week Apple announced the integration of GPT into their some of their software. So
yeah, I can't wait to test that out.
It's
about time Siri got an overhaul.
Yeah, I've never seen something like this. The permeation of AI. I've lived through the PC boom in the mid-90s where we all
It's just a fad, though.
Yeah. I lived through that. I lived through the cell phone boom where we were all getting them. And, the bricks and the essentially analog phones. And then the closest thing that I think was more recent was the smartphone boom. The smartphone boom took years. Took a few years before everybody got those. But now it's good Lord, you know.
It's like wildfire.
Your toothpaste has AI in it now.
It better.
Right? So I haven't seen something like this before so quick. I mean, it's barely been a year since, a little over a year since we've started using it as
and it's just and, grown per, oh my gosh exponentially since we started adopting it a year ago here at the agency. Are you ready for my Super Bowl prediction about AI and search here in 5 years?
Listening with bated breath.
So I will put money on this. Anybody listening, you can quote me. Today is June 17th. It's Monday, 2024. Within 5 years, by June 17th, 2029, let's do that mental math quickly, we are basically going to have Jarvis in search in video form. So you make a search online and Google Bing, whatever it is, and in real time, you're going to have your own personal avatar pop up in a video, answer your query, just like, you know, a query can be answered right now through ChatGPT's voice functionality. and it'll be able to interact with you in real time. Well, essentially real time, I guess, depending on your connection and whatever device you're using it on. Yeah. And I think that we're going to start to see, you know, a lot of organic traffic drop off. And in some way, shape, or form, there's going to be ads shoved in there. Maybe there's going to be a Pepsi can in the background or something. But, yeah, we're essentially going to have a Cortana or our own little, oh my gosh, what it says, Jarvis, in Google Search and Bing Search, answering whatever question that we have. And I think it's going to be fully customized to us, learn our search habits, and then start to refine its queries that it gives us. I asked ChatGPT a week or so ago. I was talking with Zach Hens about this on our podcast episode last week. I was chatting with ChatGPT on a walk on lunch, and I asked it to compile and read to me a buyer persona based on the conversations that I've had with it over the past year. And it was alarmingly accurate.
Like about you?
About me specifically.
Oh, gravy.
So I think if that's where we're at now, and we can still, I think, call this the infancy of AI, where are we going to be with 5 years of development in that? And then how is that going to be leveraged to create the most personalized search experience? Google doesn't want you to leave their platform. So if they can produce a tool that keeps you in their ecosystem, keeps you on platform, then I think that they're going to introduce that. And we're starting to see that already with their AI answers directly in search results too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there we have it. You're going to have your own personal assistant, completely AI video, that's going to respond to you in real time within 5 years. Let's see how accurate this prediction is.
It's exciting, but it's very scary.
It is.
I mean, I've used AI to help me come up with weekly menus for meal planning and grocery lists and stuff like that. So
now if I can just get it to dishes.
I'd yeah, exactly. it's neat and it's exciting, you know, and where I'm at, you know, I do recognize we're coming up on time here, is I've just felt that us as an agency and as marketers, as responsible marketers, it's like, to me, anybody at this point who is saying, like, I don't like AI and I don't want to use it, you're no better than that dude 150 years ago who was complaining about those horseless carriages starting to crowd the roads. It's here, and, you know, we have to be out in front of this and mastering this and understanding the nuances. And to your point, yeah, will we have Cortana? Probably. Yeah, probably. Cortana still needs someone like me to write knowledge that it can learn from.
That's why Google wanted long-form content years ago. They were building the repository.
Exactly, and now they don't want to hear so much from us. So. But it will still need that. It will still need somebody like that moisture meter company that I work for, that I do writing for, to have that knowledge and that depth and breadth of knowledge that's credible and actionable, that it can work with and know about, because I don't know that Cortana is going to be entirely able to do it. Maybe 5 years later, 10 years, you know, we'll, you know, be at judgment day and everything will have self-actualized, but
we've reached singularity.
Yeah. And, you know, on what was it? What is today? June 17th, 2024. I would go on record saying I welcome our new robot overlords.
Yes. So. Welcome them indeed.
Yes.
Please spare us. All right, Chris, that's all the time that we have for today. I can't thank you enough for joining me. This was an absolute pleasure.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we'll have you on again soon. We'll talk about the new pillar and cluster strategy that you were starting to outline for us. Maybe we'll have an infographic to share online by that time, too. We'll go outline it here on the whiteboard in just a minute. For all the listeners, thank you guys for joining us today. Stay tuned for our next episode. We're going to have our good friend Brian Lothridge on. No sneak peeks about that one. That one's going to be kind of fun. That's it for today. Thanks again for your time. Enjoy.